This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
On Joy.
The Melbourne International Comedy Festival is on its way, and our next guest has travelled across the Dutch again after last year's sellout run. It's one funny lady, and I'm not just talking about her accent. We are pleased to welcome live into the Joy Studios, Ursula Carson. Hello.
Hey, how's it going? The accent, yeah, I know.
Well, that's my first question. I mean, please explain this mongrel accent, because it's a
It is a mongrel accent, you can say, because I left South Africa when I was 32, and I've been in New Zealand for 13 years, but I work in Australia 6 months of the year, so it's a hybrid of sort of everything. And then in that time when I was in South Africa, I also lived in the States for a while, and I lived in the UK for a while. So it's sort of this mishmash of everything. But it really depends on the amount of booze that's in me as to which way I lean. Like if I get angry, it's very South African. You know.
They're great at yelling, aren't they?
Yeah.
And
we just have so many more swear words too. Like English is so limiting. You basically have three that you can hit, you know. But in Afrikaans, Jesus, clear your schedule. And then, you know, like if I'm just laid back, it's very Kiwi. And, you know, if I'm confused, it's very Australian.
We're all very aware that you travel across Australia quite a bit to appear as a regular panellist for the Logie Award-winning series, Have You Been Paying Attention? So what's it like working on a comedy show like that? Is it non-stop laugh, or is it just you're all out the back trying to steal each other's jokes? Is it full of egos?
No, I think the success of that show, and I think if you look behind the scenes of super successful comedy shows, it's because the people that work on it get on really well. It's like when I just started doing that show, which I've been on it for 3 years now, I joined a circle of friends, because those guys that work at Working Dog and like Ed and Sam, they've all been working together for years. But they play golf together, they go to parties together, they just – honestly, friends. And then so when you go in there, you sort of join the circle of friends. You don't just, you know, sort of go in to
it's just like a barbecue.
Yeah.
Sitting around with your mates, having a laugh. Right.
And I think that comes across on screen. Like, so people feel that warmth. You're not aware of the fact that, you know, people, but sometimes you watch a show and you go, I just don't like it. I can't even tell you why. And then afterwards, like years later, because everyone hated each other on the show.
Which
I think on Have You Been Paying Attention, because we genuinely get on. I was just over at Nova and I saw Sam, and like we spend more time talking before and after the show than during the show, you know, and like we organise.
Well, I can say that I've actually been one of the celebrity guests on there to talk about it, and it's actually some of the funniest bits was the beginning bit where we were practicing and going through and
because we all just genuinely get on, and I really like those guys, and like I've never been on there where anyone's been shitty, or you know, it's just been real chill the whole time.
Yeah, but how do you handle Sam? He's got a bit of a he's got an attitude, that boy.
He is the nicest man I have ever met in any scenario. Like he is he's written a quote for the cover of my book, and he's honestly, one of the most supportive guys. Even before I was on that show, he would tweet about my show, or he'd, you know, he comes to my stand-up shows and stuff, and, you know, like stuff above and beyond that he doesn't need to do as a colleague, but he's just such a nice man.
Oh, that's good to hear.
I bumped into him once when I was in the Nova corridors, and he shook my hand and gave me eye contact, and I felt the most special I've ever felt in my life with Sam Pang.
Honestly, he is the nicest man, and I think that's why, you know what, people are drawn to, because they can feel your energy. Like, even when you're on stage, sometimes you go see a stand-up comic, and even if they can be really funny, you go, I don't know why, but I don't like them. But you feed off their energy. So when you're in an audience and you sort of just sit there and you're open to hearing what people say, but you also pick up on the – so, like, if I have had a shitty day or I'm in a bad mood or tired, then the audience start to get real lethargic because they feed off my energy.
They can feel your energy.
Yeah. Wow. So if you're an asshole, people pick up on that. Like, you can only carry off a fake personality for so long. But that's why you talk to anyone, they go, Sam Pang is my favourite. And you go, because he's genuinely a nice person. That's why.
But look, I've also seen YouTube clips of the New Zealand show, 7 Days.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between, like, Australian audiences and New Zealand audiences?
There's no difference.
Like,
I think New Zealand audiences are quieter in general, but just because New Zealanders are quieter in general than Australian. But it doesn't matter which audience, anywhere in the world, I would say with the exception of Russia and Germany, every country anywhere in the world always go, we just like to have a beer with our mates,
yeah,
hang out, family's really important, and we like to laugh at ourselves. Every country in the world say that. It's the same as like when there's a natural disaster, a leader will come out and go, we're a resilient people, we will rebuild, we will stand up from this, we will come back. Because the alternative is too grim. No leader will come out and go, guys, we're fucked. We're not coming back from this. You know, like, so every country in the world likes to have a laugh. Correct. We all do.
I did want to talk about your resilience because I was watching your TED Talk and you told a story about how you're in your workplace and armed men came in and robbed everything, including your clothes.
Yeah.
And you made light of it. Everyone was pissing themselves laughing. Yeah. But I thought, that's a really traumatizing story. How did you find such a silver lining in that?
I think because, you know, sort of when you look back, you can take any situation. My mum always goes, life is 10% how you get it, 90% how you make it.
True.
Right? Yeah. So you can take any scenario that comes through your door and it could either be the one incident that affects your life forever or it could just be one incident, right? It's like, you know, when you meet adults and they go, it doesn't matter what goes on in their life or they're ruining every, you know, say relationship or every, and they go, well, my parents got divorced. And I go, okay, well, that's one situation that you're now letting dominate every other decision in your entire life. If you just look at it as one situation. So I look at that and I go, all right. So I was in my undies in a bath, locked in a bathroom with, but we were all in the same scenario, right? We were all in that situation. So it's not like I was the only one stripped down. We were all stripped down. So I could either let that dominate my life or I could go, the important lesson here is always wear good undies.
Yeah.
You know?
And your nana's been telling you that since you were a baby.
Yeah. And I can show you my bra right now. I always wear good undies.
Like I, even pack spare with you.
Yeah. Well, I never used to wear underwear. I was one of those free ballers and I was...
Oh, there was some... Our proofreader was the same.
Oh, there was?
Yeah, she changed.
Well, I was in Westfields and I put my daughter down on the ground and she and I was getting a donut and the poor woman's bending over to get a donut while my daughter's going, pick me up and actually duck me. So the whole... The escalator's got to see my butt. The poor lady getting the donut got to see the other side and she just about dropped the donuts and ran. Yeah. Since that day, I always wear good honey.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. Good.
Yeah, it's amazing how you go, let's learn from this. Yeah. So every opportunity you just go, or if something comes up, you can go, this is going to be something horrific that's going to dominate my life. Or am I going to learn from this and grow from this?
Yeah.
It's your decision.
And it also goes, I mean, if we're going to make fun or have a joke at the things that have happened bad in our lives or maybe some of the things that are, we don't like about ourselves, it stops people pointing at it. And we don't have to, they can't bully us for something.
That's
they can't 100%. Make us feel guilty that we left a marriage.
Yeah.
If we can make fun of it.
Yeah. But that's what I say. This is how we eradicate bullying. You point it out yourself. Like if you have a tail, right? So it's actually quite alarming how many people are born with that extra, you know, sort of bit.
A little bit,
So if you go to everyone and go, I've got a tail, be proud of your things, you know, whatever. Every single person in the world has one thing. You can be a supermodel and you can have a thing.
You can still have a weird hair that's going sideways somewhere.
Yeah. Or, you know, your nostril is skewed, whatever. Then own it. Just go, you will never believe this. I've got a tail and show everyone so that if, you know, five months down the track, someone tries to make fun of your tail and they go, you've got a tail. I go, yeah, dipshit. I told you.
I told you.
I mean, I've just had a tattoo put on it, you know, sort of you own your shit and then no one can point that out or no one can make fun of it, you know, and that's how we change bullying. We just take the ammunition off them.
I agree.
Yeah,
that's good. And that's really like that resonates through your shows as well. Although it's very lighthearted, your shows and hilarious, you do have that really underlying message that drives through all the time, which I think is build such a great audience. My mum went to see you live.
Oh, nice.
And she couldn't stop talking about you for hours, but that message definitely came through.
Yeah. So
it's really cool to see you talk about it in person.
How did she go, Mike? Did she go, that Ursula was fantastic. I'm going to bring her some spaghetti. Like, was it? Is that how she did it?
Background knowledge, my mum's Italian. Oh. And I hope that
do you
was
have a photo of your mum?
I'm sure Tom has one.
I do. I have a fascination with Mikey's mum.
I want to go visit your mum.
You're one of 47 different comedians around the world to star in your own episode of Comedians of the World.
Yeah.
which was a Netflix production and showed on New Year's Day. What a great honour. Is there a difference between doing stand-up live or like a recorded on stage kind of deal?
Well, the minute it's recorded, there's 1,000 times more pressure on you.
Yes.
So whenever I do a festival, that is when I have the most fun because it's just me and the audience and no one else gets a say.
Yeah.
Whereas with television, they can go halfway through. They go, sorry, we're just going to stop you there. Can you just...
No way.
No!
I was in my jam, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to cast your mind back to your first ever raw comedy set that you did in front of your workmates.
Yeah.
How did you conquer the fears then, the nerves?
Oh, I didn't. I still... It's still the scariest thing I've done to date. I still feel nauseous just thinking about it. I nearly broke the mic stand in half because I was holding on to it so tight. Luckily, it wasn't just them. There was, like, I think 180 people in the room because it was a sold-out open mic night because it's $5 to get into open mic on a Monday. And then they've got $10 jugs of beer.
Right.
So, of course, you get all these drunk students in as well, which is great. So I was so nervous. And when I walked out, I couldn't remember anything that I had prepared. And I could actually hear the blood go through my ears. And my heart was beating so loud, I thought they would be able to hear it over the microphone. I'd never held a microphone in my hand, so I wasn't sure how to, you know. It was just... It blows my mind that I actually carried on with comedy after that night just because it was so scary.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot. Like, I just started talking to them. But in a way, it helped me because now if I freak out, I talk to the audience and I tell them what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, not in a, I'm freaking out, you're not in good hands kind of way. But can't remember what I was going to talk about. And then they start laughing and that sort of frees me up and gets my, you know, brain open a little bit. And then it was super scary.
Wow. You just wouldn't suspect that at all. Watching you live, you're so confident. Anything you say seems to make people just lose their minds.
No, I think the scariest thing is that bit where I'm standing side of stage just before I go out and then my song starts playing and then I get introduced. And then that walk from side of stage to the microphone is the longest walk. And I can, like, it feels like my heart's in my throat and I can just hear cuckoo. And then I take the microphone and I always put the mic stand to my left, two steps back, and then I turn and I look up for the first time at the audience at that point. And as soon as I start talking and I get my first laugh, then I'm fine.
Yeah.
Then it's me and them. But up until that point, it's like the great unknown.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your comedy draws heavily upon your life. And are you always on the lookout for material? I'm assuming your family or friends kind of are so scared to say anything to you, knowing they'll probably end up in the next show.
No, because I don't shame anyone and I never identify. Like, even my family, you can, like, if you look up on Google, you type my name and then it'll auto to the top 10 things that people search about me. And it's always my family, wedding, my kids, they want to look up stuff that they don't know anything about because there's never anything about any of them.
So you've deliberately kept your family
out of life. Is private.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great thing. But you're right, that's the first thing everybody wants to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So stuff. I look for material, but I always make it about me. Like, even if I hear something really interesting, I go, oh, I'm going to make that about me. But I'll say to them, I'll go, I'm using that.
Yeah.
But then I'll sort of, you know, but most of my stuff is not about what people tell me. It's about stuff that I observe or things that I go, oh, yeah, we all go through that, you know, or none of us are happy with the amount of chicken salt on our chips, you know, like there's never enough.
Look, actually, you've got a brand new comedy show called Loser.
Yeah.
You know, which you're going to take all around the country and it's going to start at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival on March the 28th. When I first saw the title, I thought you were writing something about me because, you know, I am a big loser. But look, what can we expect? Are you making fun of the loser or we cheering them up?
No, we're sort of embracing the fact that we all fall in that category at some point. Yeah. But because it's so negative, right? Like, it's one of those things that the minute you call someone a loser, it immediately gets your back up, right? And you're like, hang on. But that's sort of what I go, at this point, like, if the only time it's ever celebrated being a loser is when you're losing weight, right?
Or
I mean, is that show the
or
biggest,
your virginity?
The biggest loser. Yeah, I mean, if you're married at first sight, if you're a 40-year-old virgin, that's where your eyes don't work, right? If you're you know, like that show, the biggest loser, and they sort of, you know, celebrate every time a fat person loses a kilo, and I just look at that and I go, I don't, if I had to redo that show, The Biggest Loser, I would make it about people who cut in front of you at traffic, like, you know, or people who you give a gap in traffic and they don't put their hand up to say thank you. Those are the true losers in our society, not fat people that lose a kilo. Let's get real here. So I'm just trying to move the spotlight a bit, but also to go, you know what? So what? We're all losers at some point. Mm. You know, we sort of don't nail everything we do. So then, you know, so I'm just pointing out a few things, you know, what we all do that we make us losers or hashtag make us winners. And then we end with the true losers in life.
Ursula Carson, your show Loser will be playing on the main stage at the Melbourne Town Hall for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival from March the 28th all the way through to Saturday, April the 20th. For all ticket and touring information, you can go to ursulacarson.com or to livenation.com. Fantastic.
Dot AU. That's an important bit.
Well, we can all go there, look for your tickets. Yes. It's not just the Melbourne Comedy Festival. After that, you are travelling all around Australia, so there'll be multiple shows. So go onto your website and find out all the tour dates.
Yes.
Awesome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Wake up with Tom and Mikey, Thursdays for breakfast on Joy. Tune in to 94.9 in Melbourne. Stream live at joy.org.au or download the Joy app. Find all our podcasts at tomandmikey.com. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Thanks for listening to another Joy Podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.